Good morning. Today's daf and Baba Basra is Tzadi Dalad. We're finishing up on Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis. We're a little bit away from the Mishnah. So we're going to finish up yesterday's Sugya. A continuation of a very lengthy discussion in the Gemara. Okay, I take back the word very. A lengthy discussion in the Gemara regarding whether or not by Mamonos we follow Rov or we do not follow Rov when it comes to Mamonos. Shmuel says we do not follow Rov. We tried to give a svar yesterday behind the reason behind Shita Shmuel. And the Gemara yesterday went through a series of Mishnayos and Brisos that most of them prove like Shmuel that when it comes to monetary issues, we don't follow Rov. What's an example of that? So the prime example, which Rav and Shmuel are arguing about, is if I buy an ox from somebody and the ox turns out to be a crazy ox, meaning it was a crazy ox, and I just didn't know it at the time when I bought it. So I go back to the seller and I say, hey, let me have my money back. Let's refund the sale. I don't want a crazy ox. And the seller says to me, well, you know, some people when they buy an ox, they shecht with it, and it could very well be that you wanted to shecht the animal, and I didn't know that, and you didn't clarify that issue with me. And so, yeah, I agree with you. Most people buy an ox for the purpose of plowing, but I thought you wanted to shecht it. And so Shmuel's shita is that the sale stands, and even though we can all agree that most people sell it for the purposes of raja, plowing, but still, the minority do sell for shechting, therefore the sale stands, and rov will not be a determining factor in terms of mamonos. And we went through a number of other examples where we find this to be the case, and notably our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is where there was flaxseed that was sold from a seller to a buyer, and the buyer tries to plant these flaxseeds, and they're not working, meaning they were faulty seeds. And now the buyer goes back to the seller and says, "What's going on over here? They're like, what'd you sell me?" To which the seller says to the buyer, "You know, some people eat flaxseeds, meaning you didn't have to plant them, and since some people eat them, and since they're edible, so therefore the sale stands." And again, agree. Most people sell flax seeds for the purpose of seeding, but some people buy them for eating, and I thought you were one of those people. So, and again, that's another good illustration of that. Okay. In the event that, let's say, bad seeds were sold and they were inedible seeds, so there we all agree that you get a refund. Okay, so pits and things that are totally inedible and were sold as seeds and they were faulty seeds. And again, I'm going to repeat now for a third day straight. I don't know what that means, faulty seeds. I don't know what I'm talking about, but just for the purposes of maintaining this discussion, let's assume that they're faulty seeds. So the okay, good, good. I'm not going to be the one determining it. Okay, fine. Okay, yeah. So the faulty seed, so you can get a refund. Okay, question, which we started with yesterday, and we're about to finish up today. Question. So now, what did I do? I took these faulty seeds, and I spent a lot of time with them. I went into my garden. I dug. I plowed. I seeded them. I spent a lot of time, and now they turn out to be no good. So I'm for sure going to get a refund on the seeds. Given, can I get a refund also on the? Can I put in as part of the claim all the work that I put in and all the other expenses that were involved in me with the seeds? So this was a machlokus in the Braisa yesterday. The Gemara brought in two opinions in the Braisa. One says no, and the other says yes. And the Gemara says, and who is that Tanu who says that not only can you file for a refund on the seeds, but also on all the work that you put in as well? So the Gemara says it's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And the only thing left that we have to do right now is just uncover where does Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says clearly that you could put a claim in for both the faulty seeds and for the as well. So that's where we left off yesterday. Ella ha Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So we are now on Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis. We're about 2/3 of the way down on the Gemara and just a little bit to go to get to the next Mishnah. So the Gemara says it's the following Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, which is the Tanya we learned on the following Braisa. So let's say I bring my kernels of wheat over to a professional grinder. And what does he do? He grinds. But, of course, everybody knows, and now I say everybody to the exclusion of myself, but everybody knows that before you grind, you got to soak the kernels. That'll get the chaff off. And what did this grinder do? He didn't. He didn't soak. So now, basically, he was derelict in his responsibility. So, v'lo lost a son, v'asin suba, no more son. And so what happened now is that a lot of the chaff got mixed in with the ground kernel, with the flour, and now basically it's really bad. It's like this bran, it's not good. So, more son, kemach anachton v'aftu pasni polin. Let's say I give flour to the baker because I want him to bake. So again, it's the same basic idea. I give the raw material to somebody to process. And v'afu pasni polen. And what does he do? He bakes bread, but the bread collapsed. All right, I don't know what he did wrong, but he did something wrong. Obviously, right. Okay, obviously this was avoidable if he would have done his job correctly. This is the first one where like I totally understand. So let's say I give my animal to a shochet to shech the animal, and he didn't do good shechita. He violated one of the psulei shechita, and the animal now is an avela. So now he's going to be liable. In other words, it was his derelict action that caused the flour not to be ground properly, for the bread not to be baked properly, for the animal not to be shechted properly, and therefore he's got to pay me back. Now the wording is kin nosei sachar. The Rashbam points out over here, you don't read it kin nosei sachar. He is a nosei sachar. It's not kin nosei sachar. Anyway, so according to the Tanakhama's position, it's very clear. In other words, a full reimbursement. Fine. I mean, in other words, he was a professional. He was supposed to do a particular job. He didn't do it successfully. It was his. It was his mistake. It was his fault, and therefore he's got to pay. So far, so good. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer no sanlo deme bushaso udeme boshes orchav. Shimon ben Gamliel says he's got to pay more than that, and that is the embarrassment. His embarrassment and the embarrassment of his guests. Meaning, there we are at the wedding, and now he's serving. And what is he serving to the guests? So bread that collapsed, or meat that's nevela.
Right.
Thank you. In other words, let's assume. Good. So let's assume that he didn't serve the meat that's an avela, but in other words, he was supposed to serve it. Everyone was expecting it, and now he didn't serve it, and now he's embarrassed. So can he now also charge for that as well? So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says yes, he can. So now we have it. In other words, you see that according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, not only can you get a refund on the actual loss itself, but all the residual, all the tangential loss that comes along with it as well. Now granted, by the way, over here, this is different than the Hotzah. Hotzah that we mentioned earlier is the work and effort that you put in terms of the seeds. Over here, this is a little bit less tangential, meaning this is the embarrassment you suffer because you invited people to eat, and now what they're eating is either not good or it's not there. So, okay, I can hear a distinction made between Hotzah and Busha. But at least now we see that according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that you are not only able to recoup a loss on that which you actually lost, but on top of that, you also get to recoup some sort of tangential loss as well. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel points out that there was a custom in Yerushalayim. If let's say a meal was handed over to your friend and it was mekalkel, it became spoiled. So not only do you pay for that meal that he wasn't able to eat because it wasn't good, but the embarrassment, he was supposed to serve it to guests and he didn't, so you have to pay that as well. There was one other minhag the Gemara mentions over here, which is Mapa Prusa Gabe Pesach, that if there was a curtain spread over the entrance of the door, calls man Shemapa Prusa Orchin Nechnasim. That was a telltale sign in Yerushalayim. We are open for Hachnasas Orchim. You want to come in? You want to enjoy? By all means. Nistalka Maka in Orchin Nechnasim. But once the cloth is taken away from the door, so that means that we are not open for business. Do not come in. We're not ready for Hachnasas Orchim. Okay. Yes.
Does this rule apply to being a mikvah?
Yeah, so that's a different discussion. That's Hezek Sheino Nikar. It's the fifth parak of Gittin discusses that in more detail. In other words, the simplest answer is he's got to pay for it as well. But it gets complicated because it's not exactly a damage that's visible. It's not a tangible damage. It's a halachic damage. We start now with the next Mishnah. We're inside of Gimel Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. And it's really the beginning of today's daf. And the sugya starts off as follows. Look, when I buy flour, okay, or I'll give a simple example, just a little more contemporary, right? I buy apples. And, you know, sometimes the apples get packaged now in these plastics. Oh, it's weird, but anyway. But and then you come home and there's literally one bad apple. So good or not good? So when you're the end consumer, it's not good. So, you know, usually you go back and you tell them the apple's bad, and you know, depending on what the store is, sometimes you get a refund, and sometimes you don't get refunded. Okay, but over here we're really more. I'm not saying for sure that we're somewhere in the middle, but we're more in the middle where you're buying it directly from the farmer itself. Now, when you're buying directly from the farmer itself, you cannot expect that every single grain that you buy is going to be excellent. In other words, there's a certain allowance that's given to the farmer that when he sells you wheat, barley, lentils, that there's going to be some schmutz in there. There's going to be there's going to be stones, there's going to be earth, there's going to be dirt. In other words, there has to be a certain forgivable amount that's not going to be edible grain. And what we're going to learn together now in the Mishnah is that's absolutely correct. We're going to learn the exact ratio of what is allowable. And we're going to spend a lot of time today going over, and what if the seller exceeded the limit? Then what? The answer seems to be obvious, but as you'll see, as we go through today's daf, that the answer to that may not be so clear. Okay. You'll see what I mean later. Okay, so we start with the Mishnah. So I'm selling fruit to a friend. Or is it mekabel alav rova tinofas lasa? So how much is forgivable? So one rova of one kav of tinofas. For right now, the word tinofas will be defined as schmutz. Now I know that's not a technical term. I know it's not a scientific term, but right now we'll call it schmutz. So,
huh?
Yeah. Well, you'll, yeah, that's right. That's right. Organic schmutz. So and later on you'll see that as far as the definition is concerned, we'll work a little bit better on the definition. So rova kaftinofis. I know the Mishnah doesn't say the word kaf, but that's what it means. Rova kaftinofis is saw. So for every saw that you have, so what is allowed is a 1/4 of one kav of schmutz within a saw of wheat. Tainim. Now, basically, what we're going to do is we're going to give ratios for many different fruits that are being sold. Tainim, if I buy figs, mekabalav eser mesula os lemeya. For every 100 figs, 10 of them are allowed to be wormy. Martef shel yayin, if I'm buying an entire case of wine, meaning there are multiple barrels in this case, mekabalav eser kosas os lemeya. So 10 of the barrels for every 100 are not going to be good. Okay, and that's allowable. I know, that seems like a lot. It does. Kankanim bisharon. So let's say I'm buying a kankanim. Kankanim over here, the Rashbam explains, are actually jugs. So Sharon is the name of a certain province. So kankanim bisharon, if I'm buying kankanim in the town of Sharon, mikabala veser pita soslamea. So 10 of the jugs are not going to be good for every 100 that I buy. Again, it seems like a lot, but again, I don't know the business. So the Mishnah says 10% of these jugs are not going to be of good quality. Okay. Tani Rav Kitina, Rav Kitnis Lasa. So now the Gemara starts off right away with a Braisa, and the Braisa now is going to give us a working definition of what we mean by schmutz. So now, when I'm buying wheat, says the Mishnah, so what is allowable is a 1/4 kav of tinofis. Now, tinofis is something that is not wheat. That's for sure. What it is, not clear from the Mishnah. What the Braisa tells us is kitnis. Oh, it's legumes. Meaning, so what I bought is I purchased wheat. The legumes got mixed in a little bit with it. Whatever, beans, whatever, lentils, whatever they are. It's not wheat. So rova hakav kitnis for every sa'a. So now, that's much different than schmutz. Because we assume, when I read the Mishnah, giving the very technical term of schmutz, that we were talking about something that is totally inedible. And that's allowable. What the Bryce is telling us is, no, it's not edible, it is edible. It just happens to be of a different quality, it happens to be of a different grain. It's not even a grain, it's legumes. So the Gemara immediately reacts to this. Vafrov is low. So the Gemara says, really? You mean to tell me that schmutz is not allowable? Of course it's allowable. Vahamar Rava Barchia Kituspa'a Mishmei Deraba Baritzor Migrona Shel Chavero. The Gemara here illustrates that for sure schmutz is allowable by giving us a halacha that is not necessarily related to transaction, but as you will see, it will become very clear that if there's a little bit of schmutz, we mean actual dirt, stones, pebbles, earth. If there's a little bit of schmutz, it's perfectly allowable. Why? Based on a halacha in Hezek. And the halacha goes like this. Let's say I go to the style of my friend. And what do? I pick out little stones. Now, I didn't take out grain. I picked out little stone. Now, when he, the owner of that silo, were selling his product, those stones to him represent real value. Why? Because you could take the whatever is in the contents of the silos, put it on the scale, and being that not every bit of what he sells has to be actual grain, and there's a certain allowance of stones, earth, and dirt, so therefore for him, these stones, earth, and dirt represent real value. So if I go into somebody's silo and I take out the stones, those little stones, so I'm stealing from him. Even though when I'm holding the stone in my hand, I could say, what did I take from you? I took a stone. This doesn't have value. And what the Gemara now is telling us, yes, it doesn't have value, but it represents value. And therefore, no, I have to pay for him the value of the wheat that I took. What we see here clearly is that even what is allowable in the sale of the wheat is not just other inferior legumes, but even earth as well, even stones as well, even little dirt. So the Gemara says, "Kidnis rova afroes pachos mirova." So the Gemara makes a very, very fine distinction. The Gemara says, basically, yes, you're right when it comes to the selling of legumes. So meaning, Let me say it better. If we're talking about the sale of wheat, and there is kitnis mixed in with it, so for there, what is allowable is up to and including rova kav for every saw that you sell. But when it comes to dirt, pachos me rova. So the Gemara says that the threshold of what is allowable for dirt is going to be slightly less than that which is allowable for the kitnis. So the Gemara says va'afroros lo v'hatanya. So the Gemara says, but what about the following brayso? Amocher perso chaver chita mekaba alav rova kitnis l'sa. So orim mekaba alav rova nishavas l'sa. So here in this brayso, we're basically seeing the same thing, but the brayso over here is being very clear about what is allowable when selling what. When I'm selling wheat, what is allowable is a rovakav of lentils. And when I'm selling barley, what is allowed is a rovakav of nishovis, straw. When I'm selling adash, when I'm selling lentils, mekab alav, rova afroris lasa, what is allowable is dirt. Now, again, non-agrarian over here, giving the daf today. But basically, the difference between wheat, barley, versus the adashim, the lentils, is that when the wheat and barley, it's harvesting. Which means that I'm not actually making contact with the earth when I am cutting it down. I'm cutting down the chaff. Mashe'enke, when it comes to lentils, so there I'm extracting it from the earth itself. So therefore, it is assumed and understood that organically, there's going to be a little bit of earth getting mixed in with there. But what we learned just together now is that when it comes to the sale of lentils, there's a certain allowable amount of earth that's allowed to be mixed in. The Gemara is going to assume, now again, it's an assumption, that just like there is an allowance of rovav kav of earth getting mixed up with lentils, the same allowance would be true for wheat and barley as well. The Gemara makes a very simple distinction. So the Gemara says, no, lentils are different for the reason that I explained. That when you are harvesting lentils, you're actually, your hand is in the earth, is in the dirt, is in the earth, and so therefore that's why actual dirt and earth is allowable when it comes to the sale of lentils. When you're selling wheat and barley, so you are cutting the chaff, your hand is not in the dirt, and therefore no dirt is allowed. Not no dirt, but a kav, a rova kav of dirt is not allowed in the sale of wheat and barley. So the Gemara, let's just finish up this one thread of Gemara. I want to go back, as you'll see in just a moment. At the time of Adash and Demakakr, Lohu, Avachit Vasar, Lo. So the Gemara says, so you're telling me now that with this fundamental difference that when I am unearthing lentils, that's why, because my hand is in the dirt, that's why there's an allowance of earth, and you're telling me that when it comes to wheat and barley, I don't have to make contact with the earth, if that's true, so then maybe the Gemara is going to suggest that there should be no allowance of dirt when it comes to the sale of wheat and barley. So the Gemara says, that maybe there's no acceptable allowance of earth when the sale of wheat and barley. So the Gemara says, no. sale. That even in the sale of wheat and barley, there's an allowance of earth, of dirt. The Gemara says, I would have had a very good havamina, which is that since when I am harvesting lentils, my hand is in the dirt, so maybe the allowance for earth when selling lentils would exceed that of a rova hakav. So kamash malan. So the Gemara says, so that's what we come to learn together. What we're learning together is that, no, even when the selling of lentils, and even though you could have made an argument that there should be a higher threshold of what is allowed in the sale, how much earth is allowed in the sale, kamash malan, that no, that still the maximum amount percentage-wise that is allowed in the sale of lentils is going to be a rova hakav together with the sale of the lentils. Okay, let's pause over here. Let's quickly recap, and I do want to touch on a fundamental issue, which comes up in the Rashbam right here. Okay, so what do we have right now? That when I am buying products from the farmer, wheat, barley, lentils, right? And the truth of the matter is the Mishnah even extended that to dates, wine, even the purchasing of barrels. So there is an allowance, a certain assumed forgiveness on the part of the buyer that not everything is going to be perfect. There's going to be a certain amount of not good product in there. Now, how much? The Mishnah says in the sale of wheat, it's going to be rova hakav. It's going to be a quarter of a kav for every saw that is sold. And what we spent our last couple minutes doing is perhaps making some very, very limited distinction between what's the schmutz in the product. Is it not wheat but something edible like lentils, or could it be even earth? The basic conclusion of the Gemara is it could be even earth as well. Maybe a very small distinction that for lentils I'm allowed up to and including a rov hakav, but when it comes to earth I'm only allowed up to but not including a rova hakav. Okay, maybe there's that little distinction, but the basic idea is there's a certain amount that is forgivable. Now, earth, meaning it's a forgivable amount. How do I know that? Because of the halacha. The halacha is meaning that, how do I know that? Because of the halacha. Halacha is that if I go into someone's property and I pick out the little stones from his silo, so I have to pay for it. Clearly that means that he was allowed to sell those stones together with his grain. Okay, I want to spend now just a couple of minutes, it comes on now to a fundamental issue, in that when I took stones out of his silo, what kind of nezek is that? What kind of damage is that? Is that grama biyadayim? In other words, did I damage this property outright? Okay. Okay. So let's see the Rashbam inside. So if you said yes, you're in good shape. If you said no, you're in good shape. As Ben predicted correctly, it's subject to the following debate. Let's take a look at the Rashbam together. It's the top Rashbam on Sadi Dalam at Aleph, and here we touch on a really basic issue. No sunlight to mechitim. So I go into my friend's silo and I take out stones, and the halacha is very clear. Halacha is I have to pay because what I did is damages. What kind of damages that I did? Sharei hivchisa b'mida, meaning he had a certain volume and I've diminished the volume. De'iu hava mezaven lei imachitim. He would have sold that stones and he's allowed to sell those stones together with the wheat. Because again, there is an assumed forgiveness on the part of the buyer that a certain amount of stones is going to be sold with that wheat. Aval, lachzor or la'arev eino yachol. So here now we get to an interesting point, which is, wait one second. If I was allowed to sell those stones together with the wheat, and someone picked it out, so why don't we do the following? Put it back. Aren't I allowed to do that? So the Rashbam says, no, of course you're not allowed to do that. Because, eino yachol, dahashta osa avla biyadayim. The Rashbam says, because now, what are you doing? You are corrupting. And you're doing so actively. Active corruption. Dichsiv, the pasuk says also aval, that you're not allowed to pervert, you're not allowed to corrupt. Now v'gam lokeach lamachal, ela mashin isarv me'atzmo. Now yes, it's true that the buyer does forgive, but that's only when the mixture was organic. Im hatvua ba'karcha shamocher kishabar hatzror mashlichutz hezek biyadayim hu. And that now means that when somebody comes and takes the stones out, you can't put it back in again. That's an avla. And so therefore, what he's done now is that he is irrevocably damaged the volume amount. And therefore, the Rashbam says we're going to now call that hezek biyadayim. Show some source how you lo shavim kamochitim, because for him those stones actually represented wheat. They are representative of the wheat that he could have sold. Wait, just give me a second, and I'm going to pause. Okay, now that was the Rashbam just arguing that what you did is hezek b'yadayim, because what you did is you destroyed something of actual value. Now the Rashbam is going to think about it again. Inami, the Rashbam says alternatively, maybe the argument is no. Maybe the argument is that, look, when all said and done, what did I steal? Something that intrinsically has no value. It's a stone. It just happens to be that the seller could sell it as if it was wheat. So now, if it doesn't have any intrinsic value, and I destroyed it, is that really nezek b'yadayim? The Rashbam now will reconsider his position. Inami lo chashiva lehezek gamor. It's not real damages. Because again, I'm talking about a stone over here. It doesn't have intrinsic value. Oh, but the Rashbam says you're right. So what I'm doing now is not actively destroying, but I'm pretty close to actively destroying. And when the Gemara expresses this, the Gemara describes it as garmi. Now, just as a quick background, we know grama ben nizikin is pater, that if I don't actively cause damage to somebody, but I inactively, not the best way to describe it, if I do something which leads to somebody's destruction of somebody's property, so that's grama, and grama ben nizikin is pater. You're not liable for grama. Okay, there's a lengthy discussion about bidei shamayim, ethically, do I have to pay? Gemara, in the beginning of the sixth parak of Baba Kama, has a lengthy discussion of having to pay, having to pay midina de shamayim, meaning ethically. But according to the strict letter of the law, can Beis Din enforce me to pay grama? The answer is no. Now, there is a category that lies somewhere between hezek biadayim and grama. The Gemara describes it as garmi. To be fair, some Rishonim do not see distinctions between Grama and Garmi. But obviously over here, the Rashbam is going to see a basic difference between Grama and Garmi. Garmi now is damages that I do. That's not Hezek B'Adayim, but not absolute Grama. It somewhere lies in the middle. And what this Rashbam will do, and that's really critical, is he's going to try to paint the corners of what is grama versus what is garmi. This example over here, when I take stones away from somebody's silo, stones that in of themselves do not have value, but represent value to the person I took them from, so the Rashbam clearly will put that in the category of garmi. Now, garmi, are you liable for garmi? Some say yes. Now, when I say some yes, say yes, we're going to see the Gemara in Baba Kama in just a moment. It's Rav Meir who says yes. And if we subscribe to Rav Meir's viewpoint, so that means that even though I didn't destroy something with intrinsic value, but as long as it falls in the spectrum of garmi vis-a-vis versus grama, so then I'm going to have to pay. So now, obviously, according to Rav Meir, it's really important to illustrate the difference between garmi and grama. Kigon. So the Rashbam says, I'll give you examples. So let's say, for example, I burn a check that you have. Okay, it's a check. An IOU, a note. Right? A bond. So it's all the same thing. So the similar. So in those circumstances, that which I actually destroyed, is it intrinsically valuable? No. But what it does, of course, is it provides evidence that you are owed money. And with that, you now have an excellent chance, especially a check, you have an excellent chance now of collecting based on the fact that that piece of paper represents money. So there, or let's say I take another grain and plant it in your field, creating kalayim in your field. So again, did I actively destroy that which belongs to you? No. But at the same time, my actions, by causing kalayim in your field, my actions will cause a loss for all the grains in your field, because I made kalayim in your field. These are examples, says the Rashbam, of garmi. Debahu hu shaita. Now, we have the examples. Now we need a definition. So I will try my best to be clear about this. Dehu shaita kagazole miyad mamono. Because at the time when you're doing the action, even though you're not destroying something with actual value, but at the time the damage becomes effective immediately. So miyad mamono. Afa pishe no nikar, even though it's not recognizable. So, in the case where I burn a check, So did I destroy something of value? The answer is no. But is the effects of those damages recognizable immediately? Sure, absolutely. In our case, when I took the stone away, did I damage something that has intrinsic value? No. Can the effects be felt immediately? Sure. Meaning, if he now went into a silo immediately afterwards and tried to sell, and the stone's not there, and I can't put the stone back, so is he going to feel the effects? Sure. The case of the planting of the Zerayim, that one's a little tricky. Because it doesn't become Zerayim immediately, it doesn't become Kalayim immediately, it has to take root, and then it becomes Kalayim. Okay. That one's a little trickier. The Rashbam
over here quotes the Gemara at the end of Baba Kama and Daf Kuf, where we do paskin like Rav Meir Adina de Garmi.
Okay, the Gemara and Baba Kama, I'm not going to go through it right now. Where basically it was a Garmi case, and the courts found him liable. Now, as opposed to Grama. Grama, we know, is potter. So again, let's go over examples. I hand a fire over to a child. Knock yourself out, kid. Okay, enjoy. Play with fire. Okay, again, from a parenting standpoint, it's not the best of advice. But we're not talking about parenting, we're talking about Nezek right now. And he takes that fire and he goes and he burns somebody else's property. That is clearly grama. Even though I'm doing something now, the effects of what I'm doing only materializes at a later point in time. That's grama. But when it comes to garmi, so I'm doing it with my hands, even though it's not visibly, it's not visibly recognizable. Okay, it seems like from the Rashbam, and again, this is a lengthy discussion. Multiple chaburas can be discussed about this issue, but just to put it really succinctly, it seems like from the Rashbam that the difference between grama and garmi, they're both involve a scenario where I don't physically with my hands destroy somebody's tangible property. I don't take your phone and break it in two. If I did that, that's nezek biadayim. But what I do is an action that will effectively destroy, although what I'm doing is I'm not making any kind of tangible real destruction. And to put it succinctly, I think this may be the best way to describe it, at least according to this Rashbam, is that if the effects can be felt immediately, that's garmi, and then you're liable. If the effects only occur after a period of time, that's grama, and therefore you're going to be potter. That seems to be the distinction. And so, basically now, to recap this Rashbam, it's really important in terms of when I go into my friend's property and I pick out the stones that he was allowed to sell together with his wheat, and then I pick out the stones from it, so I have to pay. That part's clear. I have to pay. Why do I have to pay? So, in this Rashbam, there really are two ways to say it. Well, the first way to say it is, hezek biyadayim. In other words, to him, that stone actually represented real money, and therefore he could have sold it together with his wheat, and therefore it's hezek biyadayim. That is the first position of the Rashbam. The second position of the Rashbam is that no, it's not hezek biyadayim. So if it's not hezek biyadayim, because it's a stone, it's not wheat, so then why do I have to pay? Because it falls under the category of garmi, and then with the necessary understanding of what's the difference between garmi versus grama. Okay, let's go back to the Gemara. We're on Sadi Dalam Anaf. We're right in the middle of the Amud, and we're starting with the words Amar Rav Huna. Imbal Anafos Menafes Kula. Okay, let's say now the following. let's say the seller looks at the buyer and says, "Look, I'm looking at the grain right now that you're selling me, and I know that there's a certain amount of schmutz that's forgivable and allowable. But right now I'm looking at it, and there seems to be a lot over here." So, the lokeach, look at the Rashbam over here. Right, Menapes, I'm sorry, Amar Rav Huna Imbad, the Rashbam, first long line on the Amun. Lokeach lahakbe betinofes denir beinof sheish botinofes yosem mirova. Uva lokeach lenafos oladathim yesham yosem mirova. Vinimsa ba yosem. Turns out now that it exceeded the limit. Exceeded the allowable limit of how much schmutz was allowed. It was greater than Rova HaKav for every saw.
And so now says Rav Huna, now I turn to the seller and I say to the seller, now here's what we're going to do. You're going to do borer. You're going to separate the good from the bad. It's not Shabbos, it's allowed. And you will, on top of that, do borer, not to the point of what is allowable, but now you're going to do borer, you're going to do full borer. You are going to take out all the schmutz. Now that you exceeded the limit, we are going to, now, I was going to say, yeah, okay, good. Okay, the good. That's why I'm pausing right now. So we are going, without giving a descriptive term, we are now telling you that you got to remove all the schmutz. Now, the Gemara says there are two ways that we could say this. So, Menafes Kula Amri Ladin V'Amri Le'Kenasa. So the Gemara says, is this a strict letter of the law, or is this a fine? Is this a penalty? So the Gemara says, Yesh V'Yesh. Some say this is a strict letter of the law, and some say that it's a penalty. Amri Ladina. So let's, Gemara says, let's go over both of these smaras. It's the strict letter of the law. Why? Because look, when I'm paying for wheat, do you know what I want? It's very simple. I want wheat. With every dollar that I'm giving you, with every penny within every dollar that I'm giving you, I want wheat. So really, fundamentally, when I'm making this purchase, I'm purchasing wheat. But you and I understand that even though in principle I really want wheat, I'm not going to, for a little bit of schmutz, I'm not going to go through the trouble of sifting. But in theory, or at least principally, all I want is wheat. It's just that, for it's a little bit of schmutz, I'm not going to go through the trouble. You know what? Mechila. Mechila gemura. But here's the story, though. Once we exceeded the threshold of what is allowable, so now I'm going to go back to principally what I wanted. And principally what I wanted is, I wanted all wheat. So really, it's not a penalty. It's that once we're beyond the point of mechila, I now want every dollar to go towards edible wheat. You see, once you went over the threshold, and now I'm going to go through the trouble of sifting, so now I'm going to sift everything. So, but really, sifting everything is not a penalty. It just takes us now past the point of mechila. And now once we're past the point of mechila, I'm going to sift and I'm going to sift through everything. Amr la kanasa. The Gemara says no. Maybe another way to say it is really it's a kanas. Because rova shkiach yoseh lo shkiach. Because over by a rova akav, that is allowable because it's expected. Meaning it is totally within the realm of understood that if I'm buying from the farmer, there's going to be a little bit of schmutz. It is totally understood. V'iu da'ariv. V'kev da'ariv kansur rabbanu mekula. Now, once it exceeded the threshold of more than rova akav for every sa'ah, so that probably means that what he did is he added a little bit more. He diluted his product. And so now we are suspicious of nefarious behavior. And once we're suspicious of nefarious behavior, kenas. That even though it is perfectly acceptable and allowable to have a rova akav, but once there's more than that, and once we suspect poor behavior on his part, on the seller's part, kenas. Okay, so what we're going to be doing now for the rest of today's daf is basically a quick survey of a number of mishnayos and braisos that would seem to either support one of the two positions. So again, the question over here is really simple. It's the same as like the previous sugya. The halacha is very clear. It's just a question of why. The halacha is clear that once the acceptable amount of schmutz in the product is now exceeded the threshold, so now we're going to sift, and we're going to sift everything, and we're going to take out all the schmutz. Which is 1 second. And the only question is why, and why can I do it? So one position is that's Ikar Hadin. It's because this is, in fact, what I really principally wanted to begin with. It's just that for a little bit of schmutz, I was ready to be mochel. Now it's greater, and there's no mechila. Or, then it's not make or din, but rather it's a kanas. Because we suspect nefarious behavior. Yes, Ben.
I actually have a technical question. Let's say that he measures the pebble, right? And the amount is just perfectly right. There's like nothing more, nothing less, right?
Matt,
but the thing is, you said that he couldn't add it back into the... Could he back it, add it back to the,
no,
the weed now?
That's like
so if it's the right amount, then what happens?
No, but when it was the right amount mixed in together with the others.
Yes.
Okay, fine. So then it's fine.
No, but he's already separated, so he just...
Oh, no. Once you separate it, that's it. No. You, right.
Can't put it back.
Oh, I see. In other words, you separated because we were testing.
Right.
Oh, I see. Right. But again, if we're doing it just in the context of testing,
right.
So then it.
Right.
Yeah. In other words, but as long as it was within the transaction, I would say that the sale would be finalized. Okay. Right. Let's keep the discussion to the grains. I know. I hear your point. I thought about your point also.
Because you can buy vinegar.
Right.
I mean, I want
right.
vinegar in the barrel.
Understood. Okay. Let's keep this discussion to the grains. Meitzvei the Gemara. Now, first of all, the Gemara gave us simanim to help us commit the next sugya to memory. Meitzvei kosal sheish barova mimin acher yimat. Okay. Now, the Rashbam over here says that we're talking about planting in a field, and I have one grain being planted in the field, and I'm planting another grain in the field. That's no good. You're not allowed to do that. That's called kalayim. So, again, just like in the field, like in transactions, a little bit of other grains is okay, but once it's no longer a little bit, so then it becomes kalayim, it becomes an admixture, and therefore the whole thing has to be destroyed. So, the Mishnah in kalayim teaches us the following, is that the ratio is going to be the same ratio, rova akav of one grain to a sa of another grain being planted in the field. So up to that is acceptable. Beyond that is unacceptable. What you can do is you can be mamai, you can minimize. Now the Rashbam over here says very clearly, obviously once the other grain takes root, so then you have an admixture and everything needs to be destroyed. We are talking about where we hit it right before Hashrasha, right before the rooting took place. And so therefore there was another seed that was planted in the field, and we discovered it like right away before it took root. And so therefore what you can now do is that you can take out the other grain so that it doesn't turn into kalayim. But the Mishnah says, however, yim'at, which means that you don't have to take out all the second grain. All you need to take it out is enough so that it gets to an acceptable ratio of one grain to another grain. Now, Savrua, the Gemara telegraphs the punch by telling us what the assumption is going forward. The Rova declaim ki yosem Rova dahacha, that the Rova the quarter of a kav of one grain to a full saw of another grain is going to be similar by kalayim is similar to greater than a rova akav with one grain to a saw of another grain in a transaction. Now, why does the Gemara not go? Why doesn't it make it a perfect match? You'll see why the Gemara makes this assumption. Now, the katani yima, and what does the Brisa say? That basically all you need to do is just get it below threshold, and that would seem to indicate over here by us is that once I've exceeded threshold, all you need to do is just go below threshold, and that would be sufficient. So the Gemara says low. And
here we said that we had to remove everything.
Right. And here you have to remove everything. So why here would you have to remove everything? Presumably, the answer is kenas, because it's a penalty. But according to the strict letter of the law, all I need to do is just go below threshold, and that would be it. Low. The Gemara says no. Rova declaim ki rova da'acha dami. So the Gemara says no. We're going to assume that the halachas by klaim and the halachas by mechar are the same. The rova over there, the rova kav ratio, is the same as the rova kav ratio over here. And the Gemara says, now if that's true, so let's think about this. So I just plant in the field. What ratio did I plant? A saw of one grain, and in the very same field I planted rova kav of another grain. Now if the ratios are perfect, are matching, what do we know by mecher? It's allowable. So if it's allowable by mecher, so shouldn't it be allowable by kalayim as well? So the Gemara, that's a really strong question. The Gemara's answer, at the very bottom of Sadi Dalam at Aleph, Mishum Chumma de Kalayim. So the Gemara says, no, because of a stringency vis-a-vis Kalayim. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, Ihachi Ema Sefer. So the Gemara says, well, why don't you read on in that Mishnah in Kalayim? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi Amar, Yivor. Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that you must sift and separate everything. Iyamar Bishlama Biyosami Rava Tinofez Dami Behaka Miflagi. So the Gemara says, now, if you were right in our original assumption, it's ki yoser merova tinofes, that really by kalayim a quarter kav is really the similar to greater than a rova kav in transaction. So the Gemara says, so then I know, I understand the machlokas. Tanakama savalo kansina hetera to isura, where the Tanakama says, look, up to or including a rova kav is allowable. Greater than that is not allowable. You're going to have to minimize. Are we going to make a kenas? So the Tanakhama would say, no, you don't have to make a kenas. And Rabbi Yossi Sever Kansin, and Rabbi Yossi says, we are going to make a kenas. However, if you're saying that the halacha of kalayim and the halacha of mecher are the same, so once the ratio is a quarter kaf to a saw, then you're allowed. So why in the world would anyone say now that you need to take away? So the Gemara says, well, no, Rabbi Yossi has another consideration. That's the following. Look, what do we have over here? When all said and done, in the case of kalayim, I have two different seeds planted in the same field. Well, if there are two different seeds planted in the same field, even though from a ratio standpoint it's allowable, it's acceptable, but by my keeping it there, it looks like that I am supporting kalayim in my field. Now, Rav Yossi says, for that appearance, it's like Maris Ayin. For that appearance, the Chachamim demanded that you must root. I was going to say root out. You can't say that because if it took root, then it's Aser. You must remove the other grain. Otherwise, it looks like you are being mekayim kalayim in your field.
Kalayim is itself appearance. It's entirely appearance, right?
Yeah, but the iser. First of all, yes, I agree with you. But the iser doesn't actually take effect until it takes root. We are talking now about putting the grain in the field before it took root. Okay, Tashma. I quickly want to go through the next sequence of the Gemara. So again, the question becomes the following. You've exceeded the threshold. You have to now go below threshold. Do you also have to go down and remove everything? So as we saw, Rav Huna says, yes. Is that an Ikar Adin or is that a Knas? Gemara now is going to do one more case. Let's do one more case together. It's a case that we've gone through a number of times. Two people deposit money by a certain person. One deposited 100, the other person deposited 200. Zemer Masayim Shali Zemer Masayim Shali. Each one of them claims that they are the larger depositor, that their account is the one that has 200 in it. The solution now to our problem is give each one 100, and as far as the third 100 is concerned, put that in escrow and wait until the Seder night as you're pouring the fifth cup of wine, and then you will inquire as to Eliyahu Hanavi in terms of who belongs to the third one. Obviously, what I just said was tongue-in-cheek. There's a discussion in terms of how to treat, well, what to do with the third 100. For our purposes right now, no need to discuss it, as right now, what do we just see together? That we give each person back their 100. And so you see, though, that even though each one of them is demanding 200, we're going to give at least a common denominator amount to each one. So, hashta hasam vada manalamar manalamar. So the Gemara says, why in the world would you compare the cases? There, we know that each one is entitled to 100, and so we gave each one 100. Over here, hacha miyemer delav kulei aruve arif. But over here, what just happened? In our case, there was a greater amount of shmutz that is allowable. And so now, the alarm bells have gone off. How do we know that there is more than what is acceptable? How do we know that maybe you introduced all the unacceptable amount? And so for that reason, we are going to say that you're going to have to remove all of it. Tashma mi sefer, the Gemara says, okay, what about the end of that brisa? I'm Rav Yossi, I'm Ken Mahif Siddur Amai. In the case of the two depositors, Rav Yossi says, no good. I don't want to give 100 back to each, because the person who was trying to do deception didn't stand to lose anything. Keep everything in escrow until Aliyahu comes. So what do you see over there that we're ready to penalize? So the Gemara says, hachi ashta, hasam vade ikar amai. So the Gemara says again, I don't compare that case to our case over here. That case, somebody is lying, and we're trying to smoke him out. And that's why we're going to keep everything in escrow. But hachem yemer daru ve'arev. Over here, it's a suspicion. But you know what the fact may be? The fact may be that he didn't introduce all the schmutz into the grain. We suspect that he did, but we don't know that he did. And so therefore a distinction can be made between the case of the two depositors and our case over here. Okay, we'll pause at this point in the Gemara. Tomorrow we pick it up with more discussion of whether or not when we make a knas, are we going to penalize them on the extra, and we're also going to penalize them on the base amount as well.